Hey, fantasy coaches, welcome back to the first off-season episode of the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and today we'll be joined by Fantasy Pros correspondent and friend of the podcast, Dan Harris. Hey, Dan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Bobby. Always enjoy jumping on.
So the Cubs finally won the World Series.
And the world didn't end, you know? Everything kind of looked a little weird during the seventh game there, but in the end, everything went forward, and that's it. 108 years down the drain.
It's sad for me, man. Yeah. For those of you who always listen, you know I'm a big Cardinals fan. And look, I know Cardinals fans like to call themselves the best fans in baseball for whatever reason. I know there's some respect about Cardinals fans and everything. But this whole notion that, like, you need to be happy for your Cubs fans because they've been waiting so long, like, that's absolute garbage. It's a rivalry. Like, be upset that your rival lost. I'm really upset.
Yeah, honestly, I really hate, because I'm sure there are probably more Cubs fans listening than Indians fans. But, you know, sometimes I don't have anything against the Cubs. I'm a Mets fan, so whatever. But I found myself rooting for the Indians. I don't know exactly why. Maybe just because misery loves company, and I feel like I've had a miserable sports existence being a Mets and Jets fan. But I found myself kind of rooting for the Indians. But, you know, I feel like once you can step away from it, you can realize how awesome it is, you know what I mean? It was just really, it was cool. And watching the first World Series game at Wrigley, gave me chills for a minute. But yeah, anyway, it's over. And, I'm not sure that's going to be the last one.
Yeah, I definitely don't think so, man. It's scary. They are very good. Like, they're only going to get better. They won over 100 games this year. And we're going to talk about this later, but they've got players to trade. Like, where are they going to upgrade? They're so good at every position. It's amazing. And, you know, I was bummed at first, and not because, you know, I hate Cubs fans and want them to suffer or anything, but the narrative is just really fun. It really is, and now that's gone, and it kind of stinks. But it was so cool to actually see it happen in our lifetime. You know, it was the seventh largest gathering in world history for humans. 5 million people showed up at the parade. That's great for baseball. It's really a great thing. It is, you know, to see Chris Bryant field that last play in slow motion and watch the grin across his face, that's baseball. That is pure baseball. And even as a Cardinals fan, I love to see that. I love to go back and see that replay time and again, because it's just, it's baseball. Baseball is just amazing.
Yeah, and you know, the baseball is dying narrative has been going on for several years. But I mean, obviously you look at the numbers for the World Series, and in particular Game 7, and they're just mind-boggling. You know, they're just, you know, people love baseball, and I get that there are some issues with, you know, umpires and it being too slow and stuff like that. But in the end, it's an awesome game. And quite frankly, that swings of Game 7, if nothing else, kind of reminded, I feel like, everyone of why sometimes baseball is really the best sport, whether it's no clock or just how crazy it is and how every year there's something that you never saw before. So it was a really awesome playoffs and great World Series. And, you know, congrats to the Cubs. I mean, I'm sure it's been a long wait. So congrats to them.
You know, I found it really interesting. I think the Dodgers blew it. I think that they had a chance with their pitching staff. I mean, Clayton Kershaw, Rich Hill, that's the best 1-2 punch in baseball as far as I'm concerned. And Kershaw blew it again, man. I just can't believe it.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, you know, it's hard because he also kind of put to bed the narrative that he can't pitch in the playoffs. Right. He did pitch a terrible game, you know, in I think it was Game 6 against the Cubs. But obviously against the Nationals, you know what I mean? Pitching, I think it was Game 4. And then coming in, obviously, on one day rest or whatever to get the final couple of outs. So he did put it to bed. But yeah, it's hard. You don't. I mean, I hate to say it like this because Clayton Kershaw is the best pitcher in the game, and it's not close, but it's hard for me to ever see Madison Bumgarner kind of throwing that Game 6 against the Cubs that Kershaw did. You know what I mean? In the playoffs, he just doesn't seem to do that, and Kershaw has, unfortunately, every once in a while kind of has that. So, I mean, I don't want to say they blew it. They were obviously up by 2-1, but the Cubs, man, I mean, look at that team. They might go cold. They might be shut down for a game, maybe two, but in the end, they were the best team all season, and they deserved it. And I can't really really blame the Dodgers or anybody else for failing to stop them. If anything, the Indians obviously looked like they were about to. So, I'll give the Dodgers a pass. But it's true, and it's really weird. And we'll talk about this, I'm sure, when we get to the free agent pitchers. But it is weird to say, and probably accurately so, that Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill were probably the best 1-2 in the playoffs, because Rich Hill, I mean, he was awesome. So,
Yeah, he might have been the best pitcher in baseball over the past 18 months. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but just look at the numbers. His ERA was well under 2, and he was just dominating. He can't pitch as long as guys like Kershaw and Bumgarner, so that's probably an exaggeration, but he is extremely good. Two other guys who are extremely good are the two pitchers that the Indians were missing from their rotation. Both Danny Salazar and Carlos Carrasco were in the Cy Young race before they got hurt. If they had those two guys and Michael Brantley, who was their best hitter, man, I can't imagine how good they would have been too.
I was completely blown away by what the Indians did in the playoffs. I mean, legitimately, Ryan Merritt, I did not know who Ryan Merritt was. I'm going to be completely honest. I'm sure you did, but I really didn't. I said, who is this person who is completely shutting down the Blue Jays lineup? I mean, they gave up, I think, 11 runs over the 5-game series against the Blue Jays. That is preposterous to do. And it caught up with them a little bit in the World Series, obviously asking, you know, Kluber just to continue to go out there on 3 days rest was a little too much. But yeah, given how well they played, I think it's fair to say that if they have probably either Carlos Carrasco or Danny Salazar in that World Series, a fully healthy one, they probably win it. I mean, really, it was so impressive. I was so impressed by everything about the team. It was great that Lindor, you know, for people who aren't diehard baseball fans, that they could finally get to experience what he's like, you know, casual fan, just to tune in.
He's a superstar.
He really is. He's really amazing. And to watch Andrew Miller, obviously, other than Game 7, and what he can do, and the way Francona, I mean, I don't know about you, I felt like so many managers managed, particularly Francona and Dave Roberts, managed baseball in a way that really hasn't been seen very much.
It needs to happen. It's been missing. The logic is, it's just infuriating sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know if you could survive the entire year. You know, you can't bring closers in to throw 50 pitches a game, you know what I mean, to do that. But really, the way they did it, yeah, it showed kind of next level thinking. And I'm hoping managers can take a more adoptive sort of view of it. And on the flip side, of course, a guy who I really like, Buck Showalter, kind of did the opposite, where he lost the yes. wild card game by throwing Ubaldo Jimenez instead of Zach Britton. I don't know about you, I've never once understood the don't throw your closer in a tie game on the road, because quite frankly, you know, the way I've always thought about it is, you're just trying to get to the next inning. Pitch your best pitchers and get as far as you can. The next inning, you might score 6 runs, and then you've been saving your closer for a non-existent save situation. So I've never understood holding the closer back. But obviously, Francona and Roberts, in the way they did it, they really just kind of rewrote the book. And I was so impressed by everything about that.
You know, I've heard that Terry Francona is actually interested in using Andrew Miller in that role for the entire season. I mean, he was a starting pitcher in college. He was a top prospect, as we know, the number one overall pick in the draft. And there's a chance that he could throw 120 innings out of the bullpen next year. It'd be crazy. I mean, we've seen Dellin Betances do about 90 innings, but they think he can handle this role. And I know as a Cardinals fan, they're thinking about doing this with Michael Wacha, because they've got Lance Lane coming back and all these guys. They're thinking about moving Trevor Rosenthal to the rotation. And Michael Wacha, it just seems like because of his shoulder, he might be best fit for the bullpen. Can you imagine him in that role? It would be interesting.
Yeah, you know, actually, now that you mentioned that, one of your hot takes in one of our earlier podcasts last season was that Michael Wacha would never start another game in Major League Baseball, and that he would be a relief pitcher. So you're kind of, yeah, I know. Bobby Sylvester hot takes generally have some good reasoning behind them. But yeah, he would be great in that role. I mean, Miller, I would understand it. I just feel like, you know, the jump up from 1 year to the next in innings is something that always kind of scares me. So I don't know if jumping him to 120 right away would be all right. But yeah, look, what do you want? You could see how much he changes a baseball game when he's in. So the idea that he needs to be used for one inning at a time. Yeah, sure. I you know, bullpens have evolved throughout baseball. And, you know, something like this, not to the extreme that we saw in the playoffs, but definitely using them for longer and having guys that might throw 100 innings, 120 innings. That could be the next step. So, you know, I'm all for developments.
It seems dangerous to take the next step with a superstar like that, but, you know, crazier things have happened. So we'll see how it goes. The one final thing I want to say about the playoffs, and this is just amazing. I'm looking at the Indians lineup. Everyone, Jose Ramirez, Tyler Naquin, Roberto Perez, Carlos Santana, every single player in their lineup, I was wrong on this season. I thought they were all bad. And they all overperformed. Terry Francona, is like the Ray series for hitters. He must be. There's something going on there.
Yeah, I definitely did not have the Indians in the postseason as my preseason pick. And I liked their pitching, obviously, coming into the year. I didn't think that their offense would be nearly as good as it was. And they all pretty much had, I mean, Mike Napoli was a superstar, you know. It really was just, he is sort of the hitting whisperer at this point, because they really played great. And, you know, Francona has always been kind of one of my favorite managers, and his stock has only risen after the playoffs.
I know I only said one more thing about the playoffs, but I did say this on the Fantasy Pros Football podcast, which I also host. If you guys want to check it out and subscribe, we have a lot of fun doing that show. But I had to talk about it because I'm a Cardinals fan. I had to tell everyone. Everyone needs to know this. In the past 115 years, the Cubs have 43 playoff wins. In the past 15 years, the Cardinals have 79 playoff wins. So, you know, Cubs, you got your World Series, good job, but you have a long way to go.
Boy, you are going to be hated by every fan of every other.
The Cubs love it, man, because they just want to prove me wrong and be like, yeah, we're the greatest, though. And so, you know, they love hearing this stuff.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see how many playoff wins they'll get over the next, you know, 5 years or so. Well, they've still got their core intact, and my guess is it's going to be quite a few.
So what do the Cubs have to do to repeat next season? I mean, they're obviously the favorite going in.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, obviously, any year the playoffs are a crapshoot for the most part, but really not that much. I mean, I think basically almost their entire team is coming back. You know, all the young position players in the infield. I think their losses, assuming they don't re-sign any of these guys, are Dexter Fowler, Aroldis Chapman, and Jason Hamill, who, I don't know about you, I was a little surprised that they declined his option, which was pretty reasonable, but that's really it. The rest of their amazing team is all coming back. I don't know if they need to add an outfielder, because remember, they have Kyle Schwarber, who's going to come back. As long as he doesn't crash into the center fielder, he should be okay. You can move Jason Hayward to center. Zobrist can take over in right, while Javier Baez has played second. And they've got Jorge Soler, too. So I don't even know if they have to add an outfielder. And their pitching staff, like I said, other than Jason Hamill, is A, awesome, and B, entirely intact. I mean, you've got Lackey and Hendricks and Arrieta and Lester all for another year. So they could, you know, go out and just get kind of an innings eater. They could just give Mike Montgomery a chance, who pitched pretty well after coming over from Seattle, or just make a low-level trade. The one area that they probably need some help in is relief. I mean, you saw from the playoffs that Joe Maddon was not trusting, you know, Hector Rondon or Pedro Strop or anything like that. And
they were both amazing in 2015. That's nuts. People would die to have them as their closer.
I know, but they're probably they need some relief help at some point. I don't really see them, you know, signing Chapman, just because, you know, as much money as they have, Theo Epstein is kind of a principled guy. I don't see him giving out these 5-year deals to relievers, but we'll see. The bottom line also is that they have a great farm system still. I mean, that's the thing. They're not sort of this barren farm system that sold out to try to win the World Series. They're still loaded. So if they need to, they can make trades. But anyway, in the end, look, they're going to look pretty similar. I don't think they need to do all that much. If anything, just beef up the relief staff. But they are going to be the favorites. They should be the favorites. And I'll be surprised if they're not, you know, certainly in at least the NLDS, if not the NLCS, if not in the World Series. So
they had injuries this year. Jake Arrieta took a step back. Kyle Schwarber was gone the whole year. Jorge Soler was hurt off and on, and he hasn't really emerged to the player he can be quite yet. They had a lot of things go wrong, and they still won over 100 games. Look, Chris Bryant's only going to get better. Anthony Rizzo, his stock's still going up. Addison Russell is going to be a superstar for years to come. All these guys are going to get better. If they don't do anything, if they re-sign Dexter Fowler and Aroldis Chapman, the over-under on them has to be 108, 109, 110 wins. I can't believe that I'm saying this, but this is the best team since the 1998 Yankees, and it has the chance to be better next year.
I know. They are, as you know, you're an NL fan of a team in the NL Central. I'm a fan of a team in the NL East, and it's just kind of scary to be looking at what we're facing over the next 5 years. And they're, like you said, I mean, they're all just going to get better at this point. Addison Russell's going to get better. Chris Bryant's probably even going to get better. Kyle Schwarber, if he can stay healthy, is a complete monster. A guy who I'm so intrigued by is Javier Baez. First of all, I've never seen anybody get a tag down in the way he does on steals of second. It's rare that something like that is so noticeable, but I've never seen anything like it. I mean, guys are out when probably no other middle infielder would be able to receive the ball and get the tag down as quickly as that. And he's got monstrous power, but obviously they found something in him, you know, basically that he'll swing at anything still. So they just stopped throwing him strikes. So he slumped a little bit, but I'm really intrigued to see what he can do over a season. But yeah, in the end, this has all the makings of a dynasty. So we'll see if it comes to fruition. There have been a lot of teams that sort of have appeared like that. But right now, absolutely, they look like you can't see a scenario where they don't make the playoffs and don't win the NL Central for the foreseeable future.
So that means it's probably actually going to happen, because that's just how baseball tends to go sometimes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fair point.
You know, the thing about Javi Baez that a lot of people don't realize, when he was in the minor leagues, he was a top five prospect. He hit 37 homers, stole 20 bases, drove in 111 runs in just 130 games. This kid can be a superstar in the same light as Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, and so can Addison Russell. And guess what? Jorge Soler had better minor league numbers at the same level, at the same age, in the same year as Chris Bryant. He was a top five prospect too. This team is just phenomenal. I can't stop talking about how good they are.
Plus, don't forget, they essentially got absolutely nothing out of Jason Hayward, who I understand, right? You know what I mean? There's always this talk, at least offensively, of him being overrated even before this terrible year, but he's nowhere near this bad. I mean, he was just in his own head. His swing got long. He was just, you know, rolling over everything. He will get better. He will spend the offseason kind of working on a swing. So he's just going to be better. I mean, it's scary really to think about, particularly as a fan of another NL team, how hopeless it sort of feels at this point to see how good they are and how good they can become.
You know, Dan, it does seem hopeless, but there's always hope in the offseason with free agency and trades. And so we have two more segments. We're going to talk about free agency first, and then we're going to dive into some trade talk. And there's some really interesting stuff here. The first, I think, is obviously Yoenis Cespedes. Who's the best bet to sign him? He's the best free agent this year. Where's he going to go?
Well, I hope the Mets. And I think if I was putting, you know, money down, I guess I'd choose the Mets. If for no other reason than, A, I think all things being equal, he'd probably just as soon stay. He's obviously comfortable there. The fans love him. And, you know, it's hard because the Mets aren't in the habit of giving out big contracts. But I do think that the injuries to the pitchers kind of made them realize how short their window is, and they so desperately need a right-handed bat. So they're going to make a play for him, and you know, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think they're the favorites. Other teams that are probably in the mix are the Giants. They really need power out of left or center field, but you know, they're obviously going to be focused on the bullpen. So you know, but they'll definitely be players. A couple other teams I think who might get in there are the Nationals. You know, they flirted with him last year, but again, Jason Worth is still under contract, and unless you're moving Trey Turner back to shortstop, I don't really know where Cespedes would fit. Maybe the Rangers. They're going to lose Beltran. They're going to lose Desmond. They're losing Mitch Moreland. You know, maybe the Astros or the Dodgers. But in the end, you know, I'm hoping, and maybe it's wishful thinking, that the Mets are the slight favorite, and if not the Mets, then I would guess the Giants.
I think you always have to put the money down on the team that's already had him, right? I think that makes sense, and especially when they're still competitors. So I think the Mets probably still are the favorite. I don't think Cespedes would sign with the Giants. He's already played in a park like that in Oakland that just destroyed his numbers. And I know Mr. Producer is listening, and he's a big Giants fan, so he's probably bummed to hear me say this, but I don't think that one's going to happen. A lot of people are saying the Yankees too, but they're just not ready to compete. They actually blew it up for the first time since the 80s. I think they're saving money for Harper and everyone else that hits free agency this time next year, and I think they're going to make a huge splash. There's a ton of places he could go, but I'm telling you, he's going to the Houston Astros. Houston Astros, they're one left fielder away from being AL favorites next year. That's the only position they need, and they have a big gaping hole there. I think he's going to go to Houston. I think he's going to love that short porch there in right field. And that's going to be a fun lineup if that happens. Now, he's going to sign for a lot of money, and Houston hasn't been known to spend a lot of money. But think about it this way. They're three big superstars. None of them have big contracts yet. They don't need to sign them to big contracts. when the Astros lost 95-plus games a couple seasons ago, their profit was $90 million, more than any other team in baseball. This was their plan all along. Save up money by having a low budget for several years and then go spend on the big dogs. Yoenis Cespedes is the big dog. It's exactly who they need. I think it's going to happen.
I have absolutely no doubt that the Astros are going to have a huge splash in this offseason, whether it's a free agent or whether it's by a trade. Without a doubt, they're going to do something big. Cespedes makes a lot of sense. It's scary to think about what his numbers would be in that park with that short porch out and left. That's a really good call. It definitely could be them. I'm going to optimistically stick with the Mets just because I'm hoping. But either way, I think that the Mets, from everything I'm hearing, kind of want to have it wrapped up quickly one way or another, just so they know how their offseason is going to go. So once they fall out of it, we'll have a little more. But definitely the Astros are one of probably five teams that are going to be in the mix. They will do something big. And so Cespedes is probably as big as it gets, so it's really not a bad call.
And I don't think they're going to go with the bullpen. Most of the other good players in this free agency are in the bullpen. But the Astros, I think they might have the best bullpen in baseball. It is extremely good. So I want to talk about these bullpen guys. Aroldis Chapman, there's talks of him going for over $100 million. Where do you think he's going to go? And is he worth that kind of money?
Well, I mean, it's not my money. So if somebody wants to pay him that's okay with me. But from a pure value standpoint, no way. I mean, as good as he is, and he is really awesome, just no reliever. Unless he's going to be used in the, Tito Francona, Andrew Miller sort of, 120 innings way is worth that kind of money. So there's no way. And I don't think he's quite going to get that. I think he'll probably fall a little short, but he'll get a lot. If where he's going, I think the way I think about it is there are three elite relievers out there, right, for free agents. It's Chapman, it's Jansen, and it's Melanson. And I see kind of three teams. They're going to end up with three teams in the end.
The Yankees, Giants might just get all of them. They need relief pitchers so bad.
The biggest shock of the offseason is if the Giants don't get at least one of them. I mean, that's really what's going to be. My guess is they're going to get Melanson. I think the Yankees are going to get Chapman. Whether or not they're going to kind of, be ready to compete or not, I think, A, they need bullpen. You saw what happened to poor Betances last year. I mean, they need help and they need another sort of back end, and they're familiar with him. So I could see them signing him because you can sign him for 5 years and then they're gearing up, like you said, towards 2018. He'll still be there at that time. So I could see that. I think the Dodgers are going to wind up keeping Kenley Jansen. I think they obviously have money to spend anytime, and he showed how valuable he was to them. And so I think in the end, the Giants will get Melanson. But really, the Giants are ending up with one of them. That's the safest bet in sports right now, given what happened to them all throughout the season and in the playoffs. There's no doubt. So in the end, Chapman, I don't know. He's going to probably go to the Dodgers or the Yankees, and my money's on the Yankees.
Kenley Jansen just received a $17 million one-year qualifying offer. First relief pitcher ever to receive that designation, and he's expected to turn it down. This is incredible. So I think this means, yes, Chapman will go for at least 5 years, $100 million. I think it's going to be upwards of $110 million. I think Jansen will receive probably around $80 million, maybe 4 or 5 years. I don't actually buy the notion that Melanson is the third best reliever in free agency this year. And I know that's crazy because everyone else is disagreeing with me. But if you look at his numbers, he's not dominant. His ERA has been really good. He's got a lot of saves because of the opportunities, but he's just kind of been a reliable closer. He's not quite the dominator like Greg Holland used to be. Holland's 18 months removed from Tommy John, and teams are just drooling at the thought of adding him because he was every bit as good as Chapman. He wasn't striking out quite as many guys, but he was every bit as dominant. And if you can get him for 1 year at a nice cheap price of $8 million. I think a lot of teams are interested. I actually think that he's going to be the guy that ends up with the Giants. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with these guys. I agree with you. The Dodgers, they're going to end up getting Jansen. Chapman, I wouldn't be surprised at all if a team like the Red Sox, who look, they already have a bunch of guys in their bullpen, but if they go and sign him just to make sure a team like the Yankees doesn't. But the Cubs, they do have money, so he'll probably end up there. It's going to be interesting. These relief pitchers, we've never seen anything like it before. It's crazy.
Yeah, Holland's a great guy to point out, actually. The reason I'm not sure if he would be with the Giants, maybe he would, but I think, you know, as 18 months removed from Tommy John is a great, perfect time. But, I mean, Tommy John is risky. You have setbacks. You have struggle with your control, usually your first year back. And you saw, you know, with Zach Wheeler, everybody was waiting for him to come back all year. And then, oh, a little setback here, a little setback there, a little inflammation there. And then all of a sudden it's gone. So I think the Giants are probably my guess. Maybe they'll sign him in addition to somebody else, but I think they're going to want somebody super reliable. And the Cubs, I'm really fascinated to see what the Cubs do, because again, Theo Epstein, and I said the same thing, similar thing about Sandy Alderson. I think they have kind of similar, you know, outlooks, is that they, despite having money, especially in Theo's case, I just don't know if I feel like he could look at it and say, yeah, you know what? A reliever is not worth 5 years and 100 million, 5 years and 110 million. And I'm just not going to pay that. And we're going to figure it out elsewhere. So that's where I could see sort of them going. But I do think Chapman is also a special case a little bit, because of obviously you had the domestic violence stuff. And I think teams that he has been with, which is why I said maybe the Yankees, obviously the Cubs are possible, are a better bet to sign him than a random team that doesn't know him. So, but we'll see. It is kind of a golden free agent period for relievers. I don't know if we've ever seen this collection of talent out there at the same time.
I'll say this too. We all know that Billy Bean is a genius and a mad scientist. Aroldis Chapman used to be a starting pitcher. And if Billy Bean can go out and get a guy who throws 102 and just say, hey, we're going to sign him for $110 million and turn him into a starting pitcher, it could happen. Something like that could happen. And I'm not going to say I'm expecting it, but don't be surprised if something like that happens, you know?
Well, the A's definitely do surprise us. I think the biggest surprise of that would be that the A's would have the ability to spend $110 million on anybody, given what they usually do.
They went out and got Yoenis Cespedes back when no one thought they were going to be spending the money.
That's true.
Every once in a while, they just go spend money on these guys. I remember Michael Iona, who nobody knows. He's a relief pitcher. I don't even know what team he's on anymore. He was signed 8 years ago by the Oakland A's for the biggest international free agent deal in the history of baseball as a 16-year-old. $7 million for a 16-year-old lefty. And Billy Bean does stuff like this from time to time. So
yeah,
I don't understand.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I agree. Billy Bean is certainly a guy to surprise you, but I think Cespedes was 4 years, $36 million. You know what I mean? While he does pull shockers out of the hat, I mean, the A's have just never shown the ability to give out that type of contract to anybody at this point. So even if he wants to get a little creative, but, you know, he'll certainly have some rabbits to pull out of his hat in the offseason. I don't think it's going to be Chapman, but if it does, a classic, you know, Bobby Sylvester hot take comes true yet again. That wouldn't surprise me. So
yeah, he did it with Matt Holliday as well. He traded for this superstar, you know, was spending big money on him, and then realized I can trade this guy for a lot more, and he did. So maybe he turns Aroldis Chapman in, doubles or triples his value after turning him into a starting pitcher. This hot take's going on too long. let's move on to some mid-tier free agents. We could talk about the Jose Bautistas, Edwin Encarnaciones all day, but is there anyone that no one's really talking about that really intrigues you?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by a couple of guys, actually. Just, you know, more from a pure detached observer. I'm kind of wondering what Carlos Gomez is going to get out there in the offseason. He had a weird year, obviously, where he was so terrible with the Astros that he was cut and just somehow revive his value and his career. I mean, he wasn't that good, but certainly so much better when he went to the Rangers. So I'm really interested to see how the market values a guy like that, somebody who's been shown to really almost be a difference maker and then totally lost it and then kind of found it again in the second half. I'm also kind of interested to see what happens with Jeremy Hellickson, assuming that I think he was given a qualifying offer, and I think the word is he'll probably turn it down. I'm not sure I would, but if he does, what happens because of how weak the pitching market is at this point? He might be the second best pitcher on the market right now. And so how much people are willing to give to a guy who's kind of had a middling career and had a 3.7 ERA last year, but I'd like to see that. And the other guy who I'd kind of like to see, I mean, he's a little better than a mid-tier free agent, but I'd really like to know what's going to happen with Ian Desmond, who's a guy who I've always liked. I felt really bad for when he couldn't get a deal last year, especially because the narrative of him turning down that Nationals offer. And then he had one of the worst first months of a season that I've ever seen a player have, and then was completely on fire for 3.5 months, and then kind of tanked at the end. So just to see what his value is going to be, he's in his 30s now, so I don't know how long term it's going to be, but he can play outfield, he can play short. So those are really the couple of guys who are below the elite level that I'm really interested to see how things shake out from a purely kind of detached observer sort of point of view.
Dan, what world do we live in where Jeremy Hellickson's turning down $17.5 million?
I don't know. But that's the – maybe he won't. That was the last thing I read, that he's leaning towards turning it down. And I think that's crazy. I think the qualifying offer at this point has gotten so large that I would not have given him a qualifying offer if I were the Phillies. I know they have money to burn now that pretty much everybody's off their books. But I would not have done it because I would take it if I were him.
You know, Carlos Gomez and Ian Desmond are both really interesting situations because you're right. They turned their careers around in Texas. But if you look at their away stats, they were mediocre, if that, outside of Texas. And I think major league teams are all going to realize this, except teams like maybe the Reds, who continue to just make bonehead decisions. So I don't know. They'll probably, the Reds, even though they're not in contention, will probably end up signing Ian Desmond for 3 years, $55 million or something. But I think MLB teams, for the most part, see through this and they know who Ian Desmond is. And he's not the player that he was in Texas. So I think he ends up in Texas and Carlos Gomez, someone will give him a chance and, he'll probably be a subpar player once again, but there is upside there. There's definitely upside there. So he intrigues me too. There's two guys that really catch my eye though. The first one, I talk about him all the time, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. He's coming out of Cuba. His older brother, Yulieski Gurriel, just signed with the Astros. And both Gurriel brothers are bona fide superstars. They really are. The older brother was much better than Yoenis Cespedes. He was much better than all these Cuban guys who have come out. Yasiel Puig, you name it. Jose Abreu, anybody. He was way better than them. And Lourdes Gurriel, they're saying, is the best of them all. Their dad was the best Cuban player in baseball history, and they're saying that this kid is the best of them all. He's 23 years old, and he's going to make a big splash. He's a second baseman, third baseman, shortstop, center fielder, wherever you want to put him. He's going to be really, really good. Think Manny Machado. That's who this kid is. And add him in your fantasy teams next year. He's going to be a big, big splash. Now, the other one, Sean Rodriguez. Sean Rodriguez kind of came out of nowhere last year. And a lot of people don't realize just how good he was last season. But just look at his numbers. In Pittsburgh, which is a horrible park for hitters, he had an 859 OPS. He had 18 homers. He plays every single position except for catcher and pitcher. He's really good. And look, he's 31 years old now, so he's not going to get a big contract. But, you know, this isn't just some kind of fluke. He was a pretty good prospect. He dominated in the minor leagues before he was called up. And he's just never got his chance outside of against lefties. And he's always been very good face lefties. So he's a name that I'm really interested in because he's going to get his chance again this year. And he's going to be a guy, I think a lot like Jake Lamb, that catches the nation off guard. And they realize he's a very good baseball player. So I'm going to be curious to see where he signs as well.
You know, the one thing with both those guys that you mentioned, which I think teams are starting to really value at this point, and kind of it's been shown with guys like Zobrist and stuff like that, is just their ability to play pretty much anywhere. And that's a huge deal in today's game. And so both those guys are really interesting, and they're going to have more value, I think, than you would even think based looking on their numbers, because I think teams at this point are really starting to value the position flexibility with guys that are sort of like super utility players and can go anywhere.
So we already talked about Jeremy Hellickson being the number two starting pitcher this year. Obviously, Rich Hill's number one. Where do you think he ends up?
Oh, goodness. I honestly don't know. I mean, maybe the Dodgers. I sort of default to the Dodgers just because they have so much money. And their staff really isn't that great at this point. And they know him and he did well and that sort of stuff. But my guess would probably be the Dodgers because I'm just not exactly sure where else he'd be a perfect fit.
Why would they trade all these players for Rich Hill and then not make an effort to re-sign them when they have $1 billion to spend?
That's right. That's sort of the default, honestly, is they basically have an unlimited supply of cash. And he was great for them after they traded for him. You know, as you said, he was definitely part of the best 1-2 punch in the playoffs. So I'd be surprised at this point if he went anywhere else. And look, he's great. And he's 36, which is crazy. But he doesn't have that much mileage on his arm because he's basically been injured the majority of his career. So yeah, I definitely think that they're going to be involved, and in the end, they're probably the favorites to sign him.
So with the miserable state of the starting pitcher market, are we going to see teams put good pitchers up for trade this year?
Yeah, I think so. It makes sense to do it one way or another. I think almost assuredly one of the guys on the Rays is going to be dealt, whether it's Archer or Odorizzi or Smiley. That's just kind of what the Rays do. There was obviously Odorizzi was kind of heavily involved at the deadline about talks. And I think actually Joel Sherman of the New York Post actually tweeted today that he spoke to the GM of the Rays and basically said, based on the returns that they're looking at, they'd be shocked if they don't deal one of them. So one of the three of them, I would be shocked if they're not dealt. I'd be possibly interested to see if the White Sox market Chris Sale or Jose Quintana. I mean, Sale could bring back a ridiculous amount, and the White Sox are it's just not happening right now for the White Sox. So I could see that. And again, it's definitely a seller's market at this point, so I could see that. I could see the A's. You know, we talked about Billy Bean always being surprising, and obviously Sonny Gray would be someone, but he's coming off such a down year that, you know, it doesn't seem like Billy Bean to sell low. A couple other guys who I thought of when I was thinking about who could be possibly on the trading block. Irvin Santana kind of quietly had a decent year, and he eats innings, and he's been pretty solid, and he just has 2 years left, and he can kind of be an innings eater, and he doesn't really fit with the Twins at this point, who aren't close to competing. And then I kind of was wondering whether the Nats might think about it, because the market's so good, of dangling Gio Gonzalez, especially if the Dodgers sign Rich Hill. Obviously, a lefty starter at this point would be pretty valuable. He's got a couple of years left. And obviously they've got the big two in Scherzer and Strasburg. Roark really showed that he can handle it. They've got good young pitchers coming up. You know, they've got Ronaldo Lopez, and they've got Giolito, and Joe Ross should be healthy. So I could see them trying to maybe make a splash. But for the most part, if there's going to be one pitcher that's dealt, it's almost assuredly going to be one of Archer, Smiley, and Odorizzi.
Yeah, the thing about Archer and Sonny Gray, it's like you said, they both had down years. And so, I think the Rays could just wait and see with Chris Archer. He pitches for 3 months and dominates like we know he can, like he did kind of at the end of the season. And then his stock goes way up. So I think the Rays are going to make a move. It's almost a certainty. But I think it's going to be Jake Odorizzi. Jake Odorizzi's already been trading in his career for Zach Greinke and Will Myers. So I'm curious to see who he's going to fetch for them this time. But I think National League teams know this because they all do their research. Jake Odorizzi can really hit the snot out of the ball. When he was in high school, he was a first-round prospect as a shortstop. Now, the Brewers drafted him as a pitcher, and they obviously knew what they were doing because he was very good, but this guy can hit the ball, and National League teams know this. I know National League teams have tried to make a move for him in the past with the Cubs. The Cardinals tried to make a move for him. I think one of these teams trade for him, and it'll be interesting to see who it is. Now, Chris Sale is an interesting name because he's a huge name. Obviously, he could fetch an absolute ton. There's only a handful of teams who could even afford him, probably, with the prospects they'd need. But we know there's some tension there with the front office. So I think that he does get moved. I think it's the biggest thing in the offseason. And I would not be surprised if it's the Chicago Cubs. We talked about how they have these extra guys. Kyle Schwarber is a pure DH. He belongs in the American League. You trade Kyle Schwarber, you trade Jorge Solar, maybe even trade Kyle Hendricks. Maybe that's what it would take. I know he was really good. He was in the Cy Young conversation. I don't know. One of these other pitchers, they've also got these other top prospects. Eloy Jimenez, who if you look at him, he's kind of like a Manny Machado of the future. Not Manny Machado, Manny Ramirez of the future. He's a very good prospect. Ian Happ is a top 50 prospect. They've got all these other guys coming down the pipeline. Eddie Julio Martinez, who's coming out of Latin America. He could be a great guy. They've got all these guys to move. Why not do that and go for back-to-back-to-back World Series? If you have Chris Sale, Jake Arrieta, Kyle Hendricks, and then that lineup, who's going to beat you? You might win 120 games.
I think if they trade for Chris Sale, we can just cancel the season then, because there's really no reason to play it out at this point, because absent several catastrophic injuries, they'd pretty much be unstoppable. And like you said, it's true. There's definitely tension between Sale and the front office. He doesn't seem happy there. And B, there really are only a handful of teams, Cubs being one of them, that have the prospects that could get it done. So that's a horrible thought. I didn't think about it, but now I'm not going to be able to sleep at night thinking about what the heck or not that they could be. So we'll see about that. With Odorizzi, just to touch back on that, I definitely think he's the guy as well, now that you mention it, because Archer, like you said, kind of had a down year. I mean, it wasn't terrible. So I think they still could get full value if they needed to. Smiley obviously had a pretty down year. And Odorizzi kind of quietly went on a really, really nice run in the second half of the season where he was just throwing really, really solid start after solid start. So I think his value is pretty high right now, and it might be higher than even it's going to get next season. Yeah. So if I was to predict one, now that I'm thinking about it, it would probably be Odorizzi.
You know, the Cardinals also have 7 starting pitchers. They're getting Lance Lynn back. They had 6 starting pitchers, but they were all just hurt all season. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they trade Mike Leake, who's kind of on a friendly contract based on what pitchers are going for now. And he seems to be the odd man out. So we'll see what happens there. I doubt they trade Lance Lynn coming off the injury. Adam Wainwright and Michael Wacha both have their stock depressed. There's no way they're trading Alex Reyes. There's no way they're trading Carlos Martinez. So it seems like Mike Leake's the guy. Why not maximize on that? Maybe trade him for a center fielder. There's a bunch of center fielders that I could see them landing. That's exactly what they need. And I think that one would make sense. Now, the other name that stands out to me is Zach Greinke. The Diamondbacks aren't competing. I know people said they were going to last year, but they have new management. Why not just blow it up? Trade Zach Greinke. Someone wants him. The Red Sox wanted him, right?
Yeah.
You might have to pay some of that contract, but you could still get quite a bit.
Well, I think that there are two issues there. Number one, it's the amount of money he's owed. You're going to have to swallow tons of that after last season, especially. So I think that, number one, it would be the money. And number two, his value just took such a hit last year. You know, he got off to the rough start, kind of looked to be turning it around, hurt the oblique, and just was not right coming back. So while I could see them trading him, I just can't see the combination of prospects and kicking in the money enough to get it done at this point. But I do think that the Diamondbacks are going to kind of get blown up at some point, and there's going to be a lot of movement there. Everybody other than Goldschmidt basically is probably going to be on the table. But I think Greinke is probably someone that they might wait a little bit longer to deal, just because I got to feel like at this point, because of how he finished the season and quite frankly, the entire season, his value is just too low at this point to kind of get rid of it at what they need to do it.
You know, even with Goldschmidt and Greinke on the roster, I think the Diamondbacks' most desired player from other teams in the league is AJ Pollock. Everybody wants this guy. I mean, there's a bunch of teams that would be happy to grab a center fielder. Only Dexter Fowler's on the market. They can't all get Dexter Fowler. And let's face it, he's probably signing with the Cubs. So could you see one of these guys being dealt, like AJ Pollock, Charlie Blackmon, Adam Eaton, who's a Gold Glover, Kevin Kiermaier, who's one of the best defending center fielders, also has a pretty decent bat. He's fast. Which of these guys could you see being moved?
I mean, the short answer is any of them. I think they're all certainly on the table. You know, Blackmon and Carlos Gonzalez, not a center fielder, but both of them have basically been on the block for 2 straight seasons. Blackman's got 2 more years of control, so he's still got kind of a lot of value, and I could see that, although, as we'll talk about later, I'm kind of interested to see what the Rockies are going to be doing
for it. I think they hang on to Blackmon.
I do, too. I do, too, and that's part of it, is that I think, actually, the Rockies are going for it as well. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Eaton, I'm not sure Eaton gets dealt, mainly because he's got a really team-friendly contract, and he's under control through 2021 if they exercise all his option years. So, you know, it's kind of hard to do. I mean, they'd have to get a boatload at this point because, I mean, he makes so little. Even if they do decide to blow up their team and deal Sale and stuff like that, I mean, Eaton's a guy that there's no reason to deal because he doesn't have a bloated salary. Kiermaier's interesting.
He's the same player as Jason Hayward before Jason Hayward just kind of was a turd at the plate. And obviously we know what his value is because he signed for a ton of money. So yeah, I don't think they trade Eaton. I think the guy is Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah, Kiermaier is interesting. I mean, he's also under control forever. I think he just won the Gold Glove, and his value, I feel like, is pretty high right now, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I love watching the Rays even after Friedman left is because A, they're creative, and B, they seem to be able to maximize their assets. And Kiermaier just strikes me as the perfect type of guy to maximize right now. So he's definitely somebody who I could see getting dealt. And, you know, you mentioned Pollock. Yeah, I could see it for sure. Pollock's one of these rare guys who, although he's coming off a major injury and missing the majority of the season, and quite frankly, has missed the majority of 2 of the last 3 seasons and really only has 1 amazing season, I basically feel like teams would value him as if he were perfectly healthy and coming off a monstrous year, because he's got that kind of talent. And he came back after, you know, hurting his elbow and missing the entire season. And just like he never missed a beat, you know, he was just awesome when he plays. He's fantastic defensively. He's a game changer. I think he's got two more years of control, so he'd be pretty valuable. That is definitely a guy I could see going. But I do think that you're right on that. Of all the guys we've talked about, Kiermaier just seems like the guy that gets dealt, right? Like the elite defensive player, pretty decent bat, good contract. It just seems like this is the type of guy the Rays are like, okay, your value is basically as high as it's going to be, so we are going to deal you and get back some major assets.
You know, a team that I think needs to have a fire sale, I think everyone in the world knows this except for the Angels front office. If they have a fire sale, could you see them trading Andrelton Simmons or maybe even Mike Trout?
Well, I think the first thing is I agree with you. I think they probably should. I don't think they will. You know, they've already traded for Cameron Maybin this offseason. They just signed Andrew Bailey, which doesn't really sound like a team who's going to blow it all up to sign someone like that. If they did, even if they blew it all up, Trout, I just don't think so. You could legitimately have a completely barren farm system, trade Mike Trout, and probably have a top five farm system from that one trade, because he's obviously the best player in baseball, but he's still under control for, I think, another 4 years and stuff like that. And no matter what, no matter how much sense, unless you're Billy Beane, it takes a lot of guts to be the guy who traded Mike Trout, you know, no matter how good the prospects that you're getting back. So I don't think so. Simmons, again, the same thing. He's obviously not anywhere close to the level of Trout, but he's got a good contract. He's signed through 2020, and I think they like him. So anything is possible. I don't think they are going to blow it up. If they do, I can't see any circumstances where Mike Trout gets dealt right now. I think the chances of Simmons being dealt would be, I don't know, something like less than 25% too. I think they'd try to deal some other players, you know, like a Pujols and stuff like that to try to rebuild their farm system. But I think both those guys would be safe in the event of a blow up.
I think Simmons would bring in a haul. I mean, he's the second coming of Ozzie Smith. He's probably even better defensively. And I'm sorry to all the Cardinals fans listening, but it's true. Watch this guy play. He's the best defensive shortstop of all time. He is so good.
I love the hot takes. I got to watch him a lot because he was in Atlanta. So they play the Mets quite often. Every game, he makes a play that kind of makes your jaw drop. It's really remarkable. His bat hasn't come along. I mean, I think the first year in the league, he hit maybe 18 homers. I may be completely making that set up, but he had some decent pop his first year in the league. And I think everybody kind of expected him to keep going. And he's just never developed with the bat. But, you know, you don't really need to when you feel like that. So he's really amazing to watch. And if our listeners haven't really gotten to turn, if he's still with the Angels, watch an Angels game one day, you're going to see something that's going to kind of knock your socks off at some point.
You know, I can think of about 20 teams who would love a shortstop who defends that well and hits 150. So the fact that he's hitting like 230 or whatever it was, man, people would be drooling. As far as Trout goes, there's only four teams that can afford him. The Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Astros, and the Cubs. This is in terms of their farm system. Believe me, the Angels aren't moving them in the division. With the Dodgers, they'd need Corey Seager, Julio Urias, Jose De Leon. I don't even know if that would be enough. So the Dodgers have no reason to move Seager. So the answer is no. It's not happening unless... No, I'm just kidding. It's not happening at all. It's just not happening.
Yeah, let's hope. If maybe the Cubs will just get Trout and Sal, and then win 140 of 160 games and just break all sorts of records, and then everybody would start hating them. But, you know, it's I don't think he's going to get dealt. I think we both agree, A, it would take too much, and B, I'm saying, even if you got an offer that blew you away, it takes a lot of guts to basically be the guy who's going to trade Mike Trout. So I wouldn't see it happening even if they blew it up.
There was this article on 538 that I just absolutely loved. They did simulations where they took the best players of all time in their best seasons at their positions, and they simulated them in a normal season. The absolute maximum a team won, it was right around 129 games. So even if the Cubs get really good, they're not passing 130. Sorry, man. Not happening even with Trout and Sale.
Well, I hope that we never have to find out, okay? Just so at least I could watch the Mets season and not know that there's zero chance of ever winning the World Series.
You know, there's one other player that I meant to talk about when we were doing free agency. I think he might be the most exciting free agent this year. I've talked about him before. It's Shohei Ohtani out of Japan, and he's this 23-year-old pitcher who throws over 100, way better stats than Yu Darvish ever had over there. Yu Darvish, as you know, is one of our best pitchers in America. He did it at a younger age. He also happens to be the best hitter in Japan as a 22-year-old. His team just won the championship. It's a weak market, so it's the perfect time. And he has this, he was so good in high school that he had this unprecedented clause written into his contract as an 18-year-old that said the team would post him when Ohtani said they would post him. So the plan was that he would come over next year in this giant free agent class, but his team just won the championship. I think it's going to happen this year. And I'm telling you, he is going for at least $250 million, maybe $400 million. This is not me just exaggerating. It's what people are saying. They're saying that he's worth that much money. When he comes over, he could be Eric Hosmer at the plate as a DH and Chris Sale on the mound right away as a 22-year-old. In 5 years, there's a strong chance he's the best pitcher in the world, if he isn't already.
His stats, both hitting and pitching, are pretty remarkable. Everybody should look them up. And I believe, I'm not 100% on this, but I believe he has set like the last five records for the fastest pitch ever thrown in Japanese baseball. Like he just keeps breaking his own record by throwing it harder and faster than anybody ever has. So I agree that he's going to be a monster. So the numbers that you're talking about sound preposterous, but I will trust you, although it could just be your usual hot takes. But I mean, when you look at his numbers, especially considering he is a dominant pitcher who also happens to be a fantastic hitter, I'd be really interested to see what he would get.
It's incredible. It is really incredible. Dan, we're running out of time, so let's close up this trade discussion really quick. Everyone's wondering what's going to happen with Yasiel Puig. Is he going to be dealt to the Brewers? And if he goes to a different environment, what kind of player can he be?
If he could sort of be focused and just have his head in the game, he could be an amazing player, really. I mean, you saw what he did the first couple of years that he was up there. I think if he really just stayed focused and was happy, he could easily be a 25-20 guy with like a 900 OPS. But I don't really know whether or not just trading him would do it for him. It might, and he definitely seemed to be a little more focused when he came up at the end of the season. I don't know if he's going to go to the Brewers or anything like that. I do think, you know, the Dodgers have a gluttony of corner outfield options with Ethier and Tolles and Kendrick and Kike Hernandez and Thompson. So they don't really need Puig. And I think there's still some tension in the club a little bit. So I think he might get dealt. I don't know where necessarily he'd go, but I think the Dodgers are going to entertain offers. And my guess is that he goes, and my guess is that he plays pretty well as he probably matures. So I think he could be a difference maker if he really gets it together.
He's still just 25 years old. A lot of people forget that. But listen to this. As a 22-year-old, he hit 19 homers, stole 11 bases in 104 games. His OPS was 925 as a 22-year-old. So yeah, he can beat that. And that's a star. It's not a superstar, but he can be a superstar. And this is the exact type of guy. I already mentioned Billy Bean. It's the exact type of guy that Billy Bean is just licking his chops over. Maybe he can steal him. I don't know. Maybe there's a deal here involving Sonny Gray, two no-name prospects that'll probably turn into the next Miguel Tejada and Tim Hudson. But I think that's a really interesting place for him to go.
Yeah, that's a great call, actually. That is sort of the exact type of weirdo thing that you'd be like, wait, I'm sorry, the A's traded for Yasiel Puig? But yeah, that's the type of thing that Billy Bean does. It really is about him finding the right environment and just playing focused. Because, yeah, like you said, when he's focused and when he has his head in the game, he is a really, really, really good player. Not a superstar, but definitely an upper echelon player.
Dan, are there any other big names that you can imagine getting dealt?
Yeah, there are a couple. I could see, you know, there's some rumblings about McCutcheon. He's still got 1 year plus an option.
Got Austin Meadows coming up.
I know, they do. The problem is, again, like we've been talking about, it feels a little bit like it would be selling low just because he's coming off a down season. But look, they're not going to re-sign him after his contract. He's going to be 32 years old. He'll get more money than the Pirates are willing to pay. So if they can get full value for him, and they might be able to, everybody knows how good McCutcheon is, I could see him possibly being dealt. I know there's all this talk about the Tigers basically blowing it up, you know, maybe Miguel Cabrera, but I doubt it. If there was one guy on that team that I could see being dealt, it might be JD Martinez. I mean, the Tigers are really kind of loaded with these right-handed power hitters. I think he's got one more year left on his deal, so he's kind of the guy. And other than that, the other guy who really came to mind was Ryan Braun. Obviously, there's rumblings every trade deadline that he could be gone. I think he's owed about $76 million over the next 4 years. So there's really no reason for the Brewers to have him on their team. And he's continued to produce after all the steroid stuff. He's still producing. So he would probably be another guy who I wouldn't be surprised to see get dealt.
Evan Longoria is the one that really intrigues me. I don't think the Rays will trade him because he's the only face of the franchise they've ever had. It's a great contract for them, but they could get a lot. I think they could get a lot with that contract. But one guy that I'm pretty sure is going to be traded is Jerks and Profar for the Rangers, who, again, was a top five prospect. In fact, a lot of people considered him the number one prospect. He can play shortstop. He can play second base. This is a guy that can hit 300, 15 home runs a year, 20 stolen bases, play good defense, and a lot of people would love to have him. They don't really have a need for him there. They've been playing him at first base. So I think they maximize on this opportunity and make a deal.
Yeah, I could see that. Another guy I was maybe thinking of that's a little bit out of the box might be Brian Dozier. I mean, he's still got, you know, $15 million, I think, over his last 2 years of his deal. But the second baseman who just hit over 40 home runs, the Twins are not in, they're not competing. So I could see them sort of, you know, testing the waters and seeing what they could get back for him. Maybe somebody blows him away. So that's another guy I could maybe see. But it should be a really interesting offseason with the trades because there are a lot of things that could happen, a lot of balls in the air.
All right, Dan. Well, that's all the questions we have for you this time. Really appreciate you coming on the show. It's fun talking some baseball, even in the offseason when it's football season. And for those of you guys listening at home, we've got some more episodes coming up later this offseason. So make sure to subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss them. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks again, Dan.
My pleasure. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.